G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
In the RSN studios, Adam White leads the charge there. Good morning to you, White Man.
Welcome back.
Nice to be here, except for the rain.
Yeah, well, that was unexpected. I went to bed last night and it was clear skies and actually had the sprinklers on. And woken up this morning and there's a little bit of precipitation. Only 0.2 in the gauge, so it's just only a light sprinkle.
It's enough to annoy me.
Well, that's all it's doing. It's not doing much more than that. Do some chair changes.
You're talking about it.
Anyway, so yes, I've got an interesting topic I'd like to bring up in a minute.
Right.
I've been dying to talk about it.
Let's welcome Scott Gallen to the program on a Monday morning. Great to have him as part of our team on the Breakfast Club, a dominant force throughout the football season. It just continues to dominate in the off-season as well. Good morning, Scotland.
Morning, Daniel. Very good to see you and a change in your appearance, which is noticeable.
What's that?
You're very tanned or pink.
A different hue.
Yeah, there's a shade of pink. Normally you're
shade
a
shade of pink.
Sun-smart type person.
I am a sun-smart person.
You've embraced the Thailanese sun.
Well, if that's what it's called, that's what I did.
I think that we can go with that.
I did embrace it. Normally, I'm not a sun man. I'm not a sun man, Matthew Stewart would say.
I think this change in, you know, middle age change of theory on the sun is interesting.
Well, it's 50 plus all day, every day is what it is, Scotland.
Well, that's what the rest of society's going with, but you're...
No, I'm 50 plus, though, and apply but still and reapply.
I thought the beard may have gone.
Yeah, to see that, you could have come back with full face tan.
All I needed was a little bit of colour on the top of the bonds, so the white wasn't as shiny. And the 50-plus reapplied every 4 hours. It worked a treat.
It's noticeable. I'm impressed.
Well, I'll tell you what's noticeable, this stupid bloody weather we're having here. We're coming from beautiful awesomeness. 30
Mate,
degrees
I came back from Doha to this.
It's going to be 23 today.
Is it really?
Not what's going on.
Well, we do get up in the dark, so...
Don't want to hear it. But it's nice to be back with you, gentlemen, after a week off. And plenty happening in the world of sport, too. And what I did notice, in fact, we'll get to that shortly, Whitey. What were you going to say? I've got something for
Scotty. Well, yesterday I was down at the Junction Oval, which was a long 4 days. And
good
on
idea
the,
at the time.
On the fourth day, to just sort of make matters
which was
a little
yesterday.
Worse, it was just yesterday. It was the Melbourne Marathon.
Of course.
Oh, no.
So we had to park our cars at Wesley College and walk to Junction because it was all
that's not too far.
Cordoned off. And so as I was walking to the ground, the marathon runners were coming in the other direction.
Yes.
So I sort of, for 15 or 20 minutes... was walking against the traffic, so to speak, and watching all the runners come past. Now, I've never participated in a marathon and never will.
I'm surprised by that.
Never will participate in a marathon. And I absolutely don't understand why anyone does a marathon watching the pain that these people were in. You know, there were people vomiting. There were people collapsing. There were people just with very ordinary looks on their faces.
Who are you and watching Joe Pignataro?
This is all voluntary. Yeah. People are actually paying to participate just to get a medal. What are they doing? Why would they do it? Like, they're in so much pain and suffering.
So where were you?
I was at the 30-kilometre mark.
It's trouble.
That's a world of pain.
And I was...
There's no fun.
I was from about the 3-hour 50 group through to about the 4-hour 10 group.
Oh, yeah. They're starting to think...
It was carnage.
Oh, I'm a bit in your camp, even though I cover this great sport.
Why would you do it?
How do you talk yourself into continuing?
It's a mental battle that I lose. It's a drug, they reckon. It's an aphrodisiac. It's a drug. Once you're in, you can't get enough of it.
Is it just to say I did one? Is that
well, there's that element for a lot of people, but they reckon, I was speaking to some people that have done this a lot, that once you've done one, it's the feeling you get from it is, let's do it again. Let's do it again. That's what they say.
There's a lot of things in society I could find that give me that same buzz. Not running 42 and a half.
But it was really interesting because there were so many, you know, there was an eclectic mix of people running it. And then at that point, there were people that were obviously really struggling, and then there were others that were sort of kicking on at the 30-kilometre mark. And I must confess, at the time, I didn't know it was the 30-kilometre mark. But the amount of people that were just in so much pain and suffering, and I'm thinking, why are you doing it to yourselves? Like, some look really sick.
Yeah, no, it can be dangerous.
Laugh.
No, I'm with you.
Well
Roy.
Done to them. Well done to them.
What's
it's a great
the longest
effort.
You've trotted out?
I did a half at the Melbourne Marathon 1 year.
How did that go?
Look, it didn't go well.
You did a half marathon?
I did.
Your body type's maybe not suited.
It was actually. It was a
20Ks?
It was an advertising policy.
Yeah, I remember.
For, at a previous radio station.
Yeah. Oh,
the half marathon. You get it, Scotty? Half marathon.
It
made sense at the
clever.
Time.
That's very clever.
But I was told I was going to do it as opposed to being asked to do it.
Yes.
So I, but in my wisdom.
Half marathon.
In my wisdom, I decided that I'll show you, I won't train. I'm not going to train you, mate. I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of making me do it.
Yeah.
Problem was. Like I got sick 2 days beforehand,
oh, no.
Which was a disaster. And I had to do it. I had to do it. I've come this far. I had to do it. So I did it and hadn't trained for 21Ks.
Oh, wow.
I never run further than 10 in my life.
Yeah.
And that was about 15 years ago prior. So I had to do this 21K run and my body just shuts down. It took me.
During the call or post?
Oh, post. Oh, no, there's a bit of shutdown during the 14K mark.
Did
when
you
they,
lose oh, there was control of your faculties? As no, Paula Radcliffe famously did.
Faculties stayed intact. But I did have, I'm sure there was an American sniper style sort of Gulf War veteran just up in a hotel somewhere, just shooting my calves at the 13 and 14K mark, and I could not move them. And then from that point of time, I got into the bath at home and was unable to get out for 2 days.
Oh.
So fair to say, I got them. I didn't go to work for 2 days, so I showed them. It was the worst thing I've ever done.
We should react
because
that.
I didn't train for it.
Oh, dear. Very funny.
Didn't train for it. I'm an idiot. I thought, I'll show them. Here I go. I'll show them by not training. What an idiot. I was, and probably still am to a degree as well.
Because it's the physical and mental toll.
The physical leads to the mental.
Well, I've obviously done heroic things by walking 96 kilometres twice.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Over a 24-hour
You've
period.
You've experienced this similar.
But it was not physical, apart from sore feet. Your body's not shutting down. It's all mental. Your mind shuts down walking for 24 hours. But I just think to myself, why are you doing it for?
Mm-hmm. It's a great show.
Well, this is an excellent segue.
You know why they were doing
this,
Scott?
I know. This is why he's the best in the business.
Very good.
He brings it up at the top. And there we talk about.
Just now, folds in.
Yeah, man.
Kipchoge.
Yeah, man, Kipchoge.
2 hours.
Can I just cut in
1:59:41,
Can I just cut in? Look who's on the television.
Who's on the television?
Oh,
we'll get to that. We'll get to him. We'll get to him. Stand by.
RSN's own.
We'll get to him.
He's
stand
got
by.
Our jumper on, has he? He looks like it.
Yeah, man, Kipchoge. Is it Kogi or Chogi?
Chogi.
Kipchoge.
Allude.
For the first time in human history.
Ever.
Ran the marathon in a sub-2-hour period.
It's mind-boggling for all the reasons we've discussed and never happened before. Yes, it was staged in the point that he had pacemakers on a flat track, there was cars helping him, all that. But the facts are he still ran 42.5 in under 2 hours, which is all these stats. I think it's... I haven't got them in front of me. Some phenomenal rate that he maintained.
So it does count because it was...
Yeah, definitely. There was drug testing at the end.
No, but I mean from the pacemaking and it was kind of set up for him to do it.
Oh, it was clearly it was a set-up event, but it counts as a world record.
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be in a event as such. So it was phenomenal.
2 minute 50 Ks for 42.2.
And then he sped up at the end.
2 minutes, 50Ks. Try doing one of those.
Well, people say, get on your treadmill and plug it in and see how far you can turn it up to 21 and do it for 2 hours.
There so it was 17.02 seconds for the 100 metres.
That's quick.
That's quick. No, not quite Usain Bolt quick, but we understand from a normal perspective that's quick. And you got to do that 4,200 times.
Yeah.
Or 420 times. 420 times.
It's amazing. I mean, they had a crack a couple of years ago and came up short. It's been a massive promotion over there. And, like, clearly he's physically, I mean, the Kenyans, they're all sort of made to be in this sort of zone. But to be able to do it, yes, with the help, but you still got to physically run that, cover the distance under that time.
So the 5K in 14:10, 10 in 28:20. So if you're a 10K runner out there, 28:20, good luck
fast.
Doing that this week. 20 Ks in 56, 30 in now 25, and 40 in an hour, 59.40. So I did my half in an hour 59 when I didn't train. So he did 2 to my 1.
That's not fair. I mean, this is right up there with the 4-minute mile and stuff. Like, yeah. This is
historic. I know you cover athletics for a job, but
thank you very much.
In 2006 was the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne.
Was.
That's
and
correct.
I went in to watch the marathon just for something to do because I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. And I was near Flinders Street Station and these people start herring down the course. And I thought to myself, oh, okay, these are the sort of the people that get ahead of the pack to say, to run to say, they're coming, you know, they're coming, get ready everyone, the runners are coming. Because these guys were going at a great rate of knots. Then I realised they were the runners.
That's them. That's
I could not believe how fast they go.
They travel.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. 21 Ks on your treadmill for 2 hours.
Yeah, that's impossible. Sorry. Like,
most treadmills don't go that fast for a reason. For a reason.
Rather than battery.
It's not normal to be able to do those type of things. And there's, it's an amazing achievement. Interestingly, there was a story going around last night on the social media avenues about the shoes he was wearing.
Yes, brand newies.
Brand newies. They were Nikes. I can't remember what they were called.
Specially
Alpha Flies,
designed
were
with
called.
Some sort of yeah. engine in them or something. They must have had something. But yeah, they haven't been released yet.
Yes, with wings and jet propelled engines. That save or are supposed to be 4 or 5% more efficient. And if you take away the record from what it was, the world record, to what it is now, it's
but
pretty much
bang
on.
But how are shoes more efficient? Do they give you more bounce? Do you know what I mean? Give me
yeah, well,
no,
I did read the article just because I was interested in it, I must admit, but not a lot of it's clearly sunk in. Because they've got these two sort of pods at the ball of your feet.
Yes.
On either side. So they're actually really unusual to look at, the sole of the shoe. But because it's sort of sitting up and, I don't know, 20 to 25 PSI is all I remember in those bubbles, it takes less stress on your body, on your legs, which means you can repeat the the cadence more often, which gets into whatever it was.
That's
159.41.
Like the Gallipoli movie, Steel Springs.
What are your legs, Steel Springs? Yeah, that's
and there was stuff. 4 Aussies who's helped. There was heaps of Nike athletes who ran along, and 4 of our best, Stewie McSwain and Brett Robson, a couple others. So they were a part of the history making, did their little stints, sprinting a 5K or 10K with him.
It's a very important moment.
Oh,
it's almost man on the moon stuff.
It is. No, it is. One giant leap. It's Usain Bolt, 9.58. It's the same sort of thing. As far as,
but the difference was he did it in proper competition.
True.
That's true.
But
true,
as I said, he ran the required distance with a proper clock. So
yeah, no, he did. But I still think there needs to be an asterisk
but
next to it.
Breaking the mile, they did that at, where they do it in a college little race in
I don't know
Bannister.
The story,
and
must have meant.
Yeah, he did it in some school in England somewhere.
Yeah, right.
No, yeah.
The cynics will say, to Whitey's point, that it was set up. As a matter of fact,
it was assisted. But
and he did it. But they'll also say that Kenyan athletics has had a history of poor results in
recent times
in Gatorade bottle samples type
There's
activities.
Been a lot of minor setbacks for them.
So but, there is, and that's one of the unfortunate parts of this is there is that conversation going around that. But, how much of this?
This
is
guy hasn't just appeared out of the jungle and run it. He's been on the radar for a long time.
That's true.
So he's been tested, and they did, as it was emphasised to me. Everyone got tested, even the guys who did their little 5K stints or whatever.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it was proper drug testing. So they've ticked all that off, and it's just got to be celebrated.
Well, I'm happy to celebrate. I think it's an amazing achievement. By the way, the Melbourne Marathon yesterday, to all that did it, well done to you, because that is not
only a shock result.
Not only for the first time have I said this, but it is one of the great events in Melbourne. It is a great event to be a part of. Just the whole vibe of the day is unbelievable. So if you haven't done it, you're into running, you haven't done it, the 5 or the 10 or the half or the full, I recommend you do it one day because it is a special event.
Thank
every
you,
year.
But no. I appreciate your support on that.
I think.
But a Kenyan one.
Well, maybe you should do it next year as part of do a half.
We can
marathon.
Go with RSN half.
I might do the half. I might give myself
I think that's, you either do it properly or don't do it at all.
Come on. Is that right? Is it?
Yeah.
Are we coming athletic advice from you? Is that what we're doing?
It's true. It's like you do a half marathon. Oh, okay, that's only half.
It's a legitimate distance.
Yeah, but it's not.
I'm sort of a bit with him. If you're going to have a crack.
That's just like.
You're welcome to do the whole thing.
Oh, I'm not doing it. I'm not silly enough to pretend.
I reckon it's just like, you do that. Oh, okay. So you're not that good, eh?
half is good. Even the 10K is good.
When you see the photos of people celebrating the half marathon on social media, you go, well, I wouldn't be putting that up. That just shows me you can do half the job.
Basketball season is in full swing, no doubt about that. We're loving that on the Breakfast Club. But we love the NBL times NBA experiment that's been taking place the last couple of years. And Melbourne United are about to step on court against the LA Clippers. Liam Santamaria is there covering it from the NBL's perspective. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Liam.
Morning, Half. Adam, great to be with you guys.
Great to have you with us, mate. Awesome stuff. We love this concept. It's taken the NBL by storm in the last couple of seasons, and I imagine now that it's got a little bit of history behind it that the NBA players and clubs are even looking forward to the opportunity. What's the vibe over there at the moment as United get ready to tackle the Clippers?
Yeah, it's a good call. I actually just spoke to Clippers head coach Doc Rivers a little while ago in his pre-game address to the media, and I asked him about that. I said, what do you enjoy about playing these international games in pre-season? He said, look, there's a lot to take out of it. We see a lot of stuff that we don't necessarily see during the NBA season. So it's great preparation for my guys to think on the fly. And he actually said after their game against the Sydney Kings in Hawaii this time last year, where that Kings team, Drury and Bogut and Jerome Randall, pushed the Clippers all the way throughout that fourth quarter, he said he told his organisation, book in another Australian team, a number NBL team for next year. That was great, and we want to do it again. So here we are, back again. This time it's Melbourne United, and they get to step out on Staples Centre in about 30 minutes' time.
Awesome. What a great experience for everyone involved, no doubt, from a Melbourne perspective. And just on the lineup that they'll be putting out there and the ferocity that they'll be going with, they obviously have started their NBL season, and obviously difficult to manage the program as you're trying to get ready for your home season. But the lineup tonight and the ferocity they'll play with, how's that going to look, do you reckon?
Well, Melbourne United will go after it. Don't worry about that. but they do have a couple of guys that they left home. So Casey Prather and Dave Barlow, two big names, of course, from that United lineup. They're not here, as well as Sam McDaniel from that roster. They're all injured and resting up for round three when the team gets back. But Chris Golding has been able to get himself right. He'll be on the floor tonight. Obviously, Mello Trimble, Mitch McCarron, Sean Long, all those guys. And they've also brought in a couple of extra bodies, some local guys here with some NBA experience, Anthony Brown and Quincy Miller. Brown's a three-man, Quincy Miller's a stretch four, 6'10". So those guys will certainly help. They haven't been with the team very long, but they'll be putting out a lineup that they hope we're able to hang with this Clippers squad.
What about from a Clippers perspective? We know that they're an improving team. What do they look like tonight?
Well, unfortunately, the late breaking news here is that Kawhi Leonard...
Oh, what?
Yeah, I know. I know, that was the response from the United boys as well. They wanted the claw out there. So no Paul George, he's still recovering from his shoulder injury. No Kawhi Leonard, but they'll have the rest of their squad out there. Pat Beverley, he'll match up on Mello Trimble. That'll be fun to watch. Lou Williams and his match-up with Chris Golding, which we're sure to see at times, will be fun. And, of course, every single one of their guys is an NBA player. So they will be tough, but Melbourne United, We know they've got some history of pushing NBA squads. 1 point loss to Oklahoma City 2 years ago, a couple of games last year against Philly and Toronto. They've got a bit of experience in that regard, and they're going to come out and give it everything they have.
So, Liam, as you said, it's now the third year this has happened. Is there still the excitement around it? Or because it was the novelty straight up, and I think everyone was really excited when it first took place. But now we're getting to a third year. And particularly now, it's actually in season and United haven't had the best of starts. What's the feeling about this experiment?
Well, certainly from the players and the coaches, the organisation's perspective, it's still a massive opportunity. Right? I mean, this is the greatest league in the world and the best players on the planet. So the opportunity to come and measure yourself up against that is one not to be missed. I think we've seen the last couple of years, the two teams that have won the championship over the last 2 years started their season over here in these NBL-NBA games. Melbourne United 2 years ago, and that was in season like this is, and then the Perth Wildcats last year. So those they feel like that's a good launching pad. And then the other thing is there is an element of a feeling, a bit of a vibe that this is now the norm. You know, NBL teams playing NBA teams has become a normal thing. Like you say, this is the third year. We've had double-figure number of these games now. And I think that is a massive pat on the back for our league, the fact that we've been able to establish that kind of feeling. And as I said before, coaches like Doc Rivers are asking 12 years in advance to lock in a game against one of our squads. A big tick of approval for our league.
Always good to have Jo Weston with us on The Breakfast Club. She's a star for the Australian Diamonds, who went down in the narrowest of margins in the first game of the Constellation Cup yesterday in Christchurch, 53-52. She joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jo.
Morning. How are you going?
We're going very well. How are you? You're up and about. You haven't let the loss get to you, which is good.
I'm just currently drinking a coffee, so that always puts me in a better mood than after a loss.
Was it? I mentioned in the intro, it was heartbreaking. It is for us watching because we always obviously want the Diamonds to win, and the rivalry is fantastic. We love defeating New Zealand, but it was a one-point margin again, coming off the back of a World Cup final defeat of 1 point. Where does this one sort of rank?
Oh, it's probably not as painful, but it's pretty disappointing given that it was our first outing after that loss at the World Cup. We were wanting to sort of really try and re-establish a bit of dominance and some form over the Silver Firm. So it's disappointing not to be able to close out a match because we did have a decent lead going into the last quarter.
Well, that was the next point. Yeah, I had a 5-goal lead. I think we did it 3-quarter time and coughed that up. I imagine that's probably the... Is that the crux of the assessment, the review process today, do you think, or yesterday?
There's bits and pieces that come from us being able to close out games, but it also we had quite a few basic skill errors, so we're wanting to sort of work on those at training and also just being able to target part of New Zealand's attacking game plan.
Joe, we had a bit of bad luck. Caitlin Bassett, who was firing, had to go off in the last quarter. How is she and what was the issue?
I think Bass is fine. I think she just, subbed out and then Slater's came on really seamlessly, which is what we really try and work with our wider squad as that one player comes on and they offer something different, but our intensity in the game doesn't change.
And we had a debutante, Laura Sheeran, in her first test, came on the second quarter. How'd she fare?
Shez, as we call her. She's such a superstar. She's short in stature, but that doesn't mean she lacks insight and talent, and she's probably the oldest Diamond debutante we've had in a really long time at 31, so... Her entire story about resilience and never giving up in terms of really wanting to follow through on your sporting dream is something that's really inspiring to our wider playing group.
And one of the other inspiring stories was the fact that Ash Brazel has come back into the team after being out for a while, and we know of her being a dual athlete these days, and she appeared to have a fairly big impact on proceedings.
Yeah, Braz and I actually debuted for the Diamonds in the same game pretty much 4 years ago in Melbourne at one of the Constellation Cup tests. So it was a special moment to be out singing the national anthem with her again. And she's just a beast out on court and out on the footy field. So we're really lucky to have her back in our fold. And, yeah, she offers something different for wing defence, which is great.
And so what sort of impact is she having out on the field? You talked about her aggression and so forth, but it's been a position that's been... not so much a weakness, but an area that you've needed to improve. So is it just the aggression? Is it the experience? What are the sort of things that she's bringing to the table that are making you a little bit better in midcourt?
Oh, well, I think both her and Jamie Lee, who is probably our other alternate through wing defence, alongside myself, because I do play wing defence, just using my long arms to some kind of advantage. But Ash, she's really dynamic. You know how athletic she is. She's really able to get up for any of those high pocket balls that are being released, and that really helps us defensively in the circle.
Is New Zealand surprising you at the moment? They sort of, just over the, not just this game, but over the last sort of 6 months or so through the World Champs and so forth, is how quickly they've been able to regenerate?
Yeah, I think so. You can really see they've got a lot of clarity in their attacking game plan. They play really patiently and they really sort of work the ball around and able to shoot accurately. And defensively, they've got a really effective zone structure, which at times we struggle to get through. They work really well as a team.
Tory Dixon had an outstanding weekend. He's had a lot of those through his AFL career, but he's also had a couple from the racing scene as well. And he was part of the ownership group of Super Seth, who took out the Group 1 Caulfield Guineas on the weekend. He's been good enough to join us on a Monday morning, probably still celebrating. Tory, good morning.
Hello, hey, thanks for having me.
Not a problem, buddy. Great to have you on. Are you still celebrating, or how long did it stop? Or did it take the stop?
It stopped about 12 o'clock that night. I'm getting a little bit older these days, so I can't really continue on to the early hours. But, yeah, no, nah, I'm definitely not celebrating now. I'm just about to do some boxing, so...
Having to pay for the weekend celebration, that's what you have to do when you're elite, Tori. Tell us the story about how you got involved with this, because one of our friends, Mark Hunter, I believe, has had a hand in all of this with the story of your involvement with Super Seth.
Yes, it's all Mark Hunter. He's the one. Him and Lockie have got me into them all, and trusted his judgment every time, and it's, most of them have paid off. I think I've been in three or four with him, and they're all bloody good horses. So a big thank you to Mark Hunter.
Was it Merchant Navy? Was that one of them?
Yes, that was my first horse.
Oh, get stuffed, Tori.
Yeah. Now, we don't want figures, but how much did you get?
I've heard it all before. we sold that one for $27 million. this isn't as much, but it's still a very nice. There's no offers or anything at the moment, but yeah, very very nice day making race.
Now, take us through watching the guinea. I mean, Super Seth is out the back. The alligator was home.
It sure was. I knew we were going to run. I felt like we were going to run a really strong 1600 with the breeding and with the barrier draw that we got. We had the right luck, and all the favourites were out wide and had to work a little bit more. So I knew we were going to be strong, but that last 100 metres, like, made up three or four lengths and just absolutely flew. So I thought we weren't going to get there. I thought we were going to lose by probably a half head or half a length and, you know, be really unlucky second. But I still can't believe it got there. When I saw the replay, I was like, yeah, we did get there. There was still a little bit of doubt from a few of the boys. But, it was nice to see the photo finish.
So how many others are involved from the doggies?
Yeah, there's a few. There's obviously a few more jumped on board after our Merchant Navy win. So there's myself, there's Lockie, then there's Ling Jong, this is his first horse now.
Oh, I get stuffed.
Yeah, Ling Jong was very animated in the Manninger, and he was up and about.
He definitely was. So there's him, and then you've got Luke Dalhouse and Lucas Webb.
Oh. Awesome.
So I think they've got a three quarters of a share as well, and then they're the main ones, and then I think Lockie got four or five of his good close mates that are very up and about being young apprentices. So
good luck to them. A Group One winner, and as you say, a stallion making race, a colt by Dundeal who's taken the breeding world by storm. So you imagine at some stage there will be an offer, but you do get a chance with these horses often, Tori, to maybe even take them overseas. Is that something you'd like to do as an owner, take one overseas to Ascot or something?
Yeah, been there, done that. So, we actually sold our Merchant Navy before they took it overseas, so we've done the... done the sale, but we still were owners of the horse, so we kind of got the prize money but didn't have any say in what was doing it. But obviously went over to the Diamond Jubilee and won that one, so you could say I lucked out on another $27 million. If we'd have won that and we owned it, we would have really hit the jackpot. But yeah, no, I'm very, very thankful for the opportunity to be in the horses, and I'm very lucky.
So, Tori, are you one of these owners that goes to track work and just obsesses over it, or are you more a sort of a relaxed owner that just enjoys the day?
Yeah, I obsess about it a bit. I'm obviously really good friends with the Hayes, so I've gone to a bit of track work and just had a look, and I'm really good friends with Michael Kent, who's with the Mick Price stable, and haven't gone to track work with him, but, you know, I'm very we talk a lot. So I do love it, and it's something that really does interest me. So I do, I think Super Seth was my fourth horse. First was obviously Merchant Navy as well. And then I had, I've had a little bit of bad luck in there. I had another one called Shih Tzu, which actually ran third in a listed race first up. And then, but I don't want it down in the conversation, but sort of in track work, I ran into a fence and had to get put down because it shattered its pelvis. So that's my unlucky sort of story with horses. But so I've had I think seven in total now, but Super Seth was the fourth, and now I've got three unraced 2 year olds that are on the way up.
Scott Jamieson has joined us from Melbourne City. They kicked off their A-League campaign on the weekend against Melbourne Victory in the derby, depending on which side of the river you're from, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Scotty.
Good morning, boys.
great to have you back with us, mate. You're going to be part of the Sanctum next month, which is very, very exciting. Great to have you back in the studio. But what was it like being back out there for points?
Well, first and foremost, I'm glad I've been given the call up to resume my my career in the Sanctum. I thought I might have got dropped.
No, never in doubt. You're like a priority pick.
That's right.
Brilliant. Love that. Look, it was good to be back out there. The A-League obviously has a long off season, which probably worked in our favour with the new coach and a new system. But there's nothing better than running out and playing for some points. All in all, it was good to be back. It was a good spectacle in regards to a good crowd, a good build up, and unfortunately the game didn't probably live up to that. But you play these marquee games in the first round, you're probably going to get the best performance because both teams are edging each other out. So yeah, it is what it is. But we both took a point and we'll move on.
I want to talk about the positioning of the Derby shortly. It's been a topic of conversation across the week, and Dave Davidovich given another mention today in the Herald Sun. But just on the new coach and how different things are, the way you play, and has it settled in, or has it bedded down yet, or has it still got time to develop?
Well, look, I think it still has time to develop, but I think we're down the path of really embedding it. And we're really pleased where we're at. I felt that, in the game, we definitely, showed a lot of signs of what we've been working on. And that's really starting from the back, from the goalkeeper, working our way through to the opposition's 18-yard box. So, to me, there were some real pleasing signs there. I thought, in a 0-0 draw, we were the better team. We had probably the best chance, apart from the opposition getting a VAR decision, but I thought it was the best chance of the game. We had so. Look, it's hard to really sell a 0-0 draw, but in saying that, I was very pleased.
Is the rivalry going to stay as strong as ever? And the reason I ask that question is obviously there's another new team in as well. What do you feel like the sort of the landscape will be with three teams now in Melbourne?
Oh, look, the rivalry is Melbourne Victory, Melbourne City. Let's not get that twisted. Western United are a distant relative in regards to rivalries. I think it's important that the new teams come in, and I think it's important that we're adding another team next year. But in regards to rivalries, the main rivalry and the one that is the Melbourne Derby is Melbourne Victory versus Melbourne City. And West United will fit in accordingly when we want them to.
Got it. I caught the end of the game. There was a fair bit of tension after the whistle. Marco Kurtz, what was going on there?
Yeah, well, I think our new goalkeeper coach was quite excited with being on TV, he was a bit riled up and wanted to let their staff know that Orla Toivonen was an interesting character. So he wanted to say a few words, and then Zorbo got in the way, but tried to settle it down, and then. I think it adds to the drama. I don't care what people say. A bit of handbag is always interesting and enjoyable. So on the field, off the field, it's enjoyable.
Now, you're probably pretty happy with VAR because they reversed that goal, but Elvis is...
Oh, yeah,
how about Elvis? What about the celebration from Elvis?
What an absolute idiot he looks like. If I could do that, I'd do that all day, every day. I'm grateful to be there now. I wasn't a massive fan of it. But look, it's a toenail offside, isn't it? And like I said, I was quite critical of it in certain sectors. But it was offside and the rules are rules. So I'm a VAR fan now, as of now.
Yeah, your game in, so it's still obviously early days, but you have had a pre-season with a new coach and a new game style. Does it feel different, and does it feel better?
I will answer that, actually. It's different, there's no doubt about it, and it's more enjoyable in the sense of, we've got an understanding and a structure now in place where, the players can win games. That's a given, but I feel now that our structure and our system can win as a game, and that's important. We've obviously got a coach who truly believes in what he's brought to the club, and the players are really important for that. And it's a bit of a catch-22 that the fans are listening to us, but I think now they'll actually see what we're saying is coming to fruition, and they'll enjoy what we bring to the pitch.
Well, there's no better safety car than the one with three laps to go for the champ, Scotty McLaughlin. 25 races this year in the Virgin Australia Supercar Championship. He has won 18, including the big one yesterday at the Mountain, the Bathurst 1000. Scott McLaughlin, the champ, joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Scotty.
Hey, guys. How are we?
We're going all right, mate. How are you?
I reckon you guys are a fair bit less hungover than I am. I think I finished up about an hour ago, so I'm in prime form, boys. So
well, we're looking forward to seeing where this goes. We'll take it wherever we need to. That last safety car, Scotty, we were just talking about that with three laps to go. Are you conserving fuel? You're on the walkie-talkie to the team back in the garage trying to work out how much you had left and whether or not you would make it. How big a relief was it, to a degree, that last safety car where you knew you were going to be able to get there?
Mate, there was stuff going on everywhere, the calls and, just try and save fuel. And, I knew that we were going to be there or thereabouts. This last two safety cars really helped, but especially the last one.
Yeah.
I think we would have made it, but it would have been tough to hold off, everyone behind us because it's so hard. It's so easy to save fuel in the draft. So, like, Vankersburg and all that, we were able to save a lot more fuel than I was. That last safety car and, trying to save fuel underneath it. It was tough. And then, when it started again, I just had to get after it and throw it in. I can't believe we did it, boys, honestly.
You did control that last lap beautifully. I imagine the nerves sitting behind the safety car, the safety car had taken off and you hadn't quite accelerated to restart the race again. What was it that moment like for you? Because it was all on you then. You had to keep it straight, keep it steady for the entire lap, going flat knacker to get over the line. What was that moment like before you put your foot on the gas?
Well, it was hard to concentrate because you could see all the Ford flags and everyone just cheering about it and everyone was pretty pumped. On the sidelines, but I just had to keep telling myself, you can do this, your best execution, focus on what I needed to do. And, I was pretty nervous starting the lap, but basically as soon as it happened, it was almost like I just hit the zone and just felt really, really comfortable where we were. And, honestly, guys, that last lap was the biggest lap of my life. I just drove as hard as I could, threw it up against the fence, and that thing was awesome.
We went into the dirt at one stage. You had the team telling you, tyres, tyres, because they'd cooled down after the safety car. So I imagine there was a bit going on.
Oh, there's a bit going on, absolutely. And, I was, they're all talking to me. I'm just telling them to shut up because I needed to, concentrate. And, guys, I can't believe it. Lance's trying to give me a beer. I've just seen him. He's just, no, get away from me. This is live pitches.
So, Scotty, we speak to you a lot, obviously, and we love the access that you give us. And you talked last week about how much you wanted it. Now you get it. The dream of how many times, I don't know, of standing up on top of your car. Was it as you thought it would be?
Oh, and some. Like you said, I dreamt about standing on top of my car. That's why I jumped up there about 400 times. It was just the people, the noise was just incredible. And I was dead set doing anything. I could have given them a brown eye and they would have. So it was unbelievable. It was just, I'll never forget that moment. It was so cool. And then I spotted Jack Ruval. He was here for the weekend, and he was down in, amongst all the fans. It was so funny, and I pointed him out. He was pumped about it. It was just unreal. Half an hour or so.
And Mr. Penske was there, and he's one of the most influential people there is in motor racing around the world. And you've delivered him a Bathurst trophy. How special is that for you? And this could be a life changer for you.
Yeah, look, they always say anything you do for Roger, is the first thing, his first is, a big thing in your career. And we won the championship last year and now the Bathurst 1000. And I'm proud to do it for myself. I'm proud to do it for him and DJ. It's 25 years since Dick Johnson won. Obviously, first one for Roger. And to have him here amongst it all, it's something that I'll never forget. Yeah, I guess that's why the old waterworks started happening when I crossed the line.
We talked about the pressure, Scotty, and you were very honest about it all. Was there a moment the night before or the morning where you had to have some time to yourself and sort of get it all together, or was it pretty easy for you?
Honestly, I was I was really calm all day. I was speaking to my mind coach Emma in the morning, and we just resetted myself and got ready for it. And you know, honestly, all day I was the calmest I ever had. Each time I finished my stint, I'd go back in the bus, quickly have a shower, get changed, and go again. And you know, even in the morning, like before the race, normally I'd be pacing all over, but I was just excited. I was having half a dance party at the end, going as fast, and I was ready to go. So, it was a perfect day, and she's going to be a perfect couple of weeks.
What's it like those stints when you're out and you hand the keys over to Alex, and you sort of sit there and you're trying to be cool, but I could gather you're freaking out.
I hate it. I'm the worst. I'm like the worst backseat driver. You know, I'll give you the tip. Don't ever drive with me. I was really nervous. There's a few things that went on in Alex's stint, but I'm always like that. No matter who I'd have as a co-driver, Alex is amazing as a co-driver. He's very, very good, very professional. But I could have the best driver in the world, and I'd still be nervous. You know, so it's just one of those things. You just got to get over it. It's like handing the keys of your favorite motor vehicle, and someone's taking it up for a blitz. You know, it's just one of those things where you just got to get over it, but it's always a nerve-wracking time.
Chris Tremaine required waking up today after largely uneventful 4 days at the Junction Oval, bending his back, toiling away as fast bowlers do. He joins us on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Trick. Chris?
Good morning. I think I've missed something here. What's the first best city in the world?
Vienna has been crowned the best city in the world. This is official, Chris. This isn't just made up stuff.
Okay, all right. So we're officially the second best.
We are officially set. We've been best twice, and then we fell down the order to number two.
Okay, now we've cleared up the important stuff. Let's talk about
you, Chris. Well, it's funny you bring that up because there wasn't a lot to talk about on the weekend from a Junction Oval perspective. When you got the new ball in your hand on day two, at the end of day two, what were you thinking might happen?
That's a good question. We batted for so long. We put a total up, and we thought, I was thinking, how are we going to get 20 wickets? So new ball was attack, attack, attack. See what we can manufacture. See what happens. And it was almost like see what happens every time we went out there. All right, let's go do this and see what happens. Let's go do this and see what happens. And just try and make something eventuate. And to the point where you think, right, we can get a couple of wickets and then we can bowl them out again at some point in time. The initial thought was get 600 and try and bowl them out twice, but, as we saw it, those things just never came to fruition.
What was different this time compared to other times? Because you and Scotty Boland have done a lot of hard work on a lot of flat tracks at the MCG and at the Junction Oval over the last few years. Yeah. This one just seemed a bit different to the others.
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe it may be because Junction Oval really allows you to score a lot of runs, and in which case, you know, the MCG, when we're punching through the covers, they're not running to the boundaries. You're running, you know, twos. You're getting half the value for shots. So rather than posting a 600 score, we're posting a 400, 450. And that itself keeps a team in the game. I think there's a mental barrier there at 600. 500, whatever it might be, where you think, geez, we're way out of this game. We've got to do something here to either get back into it or manufacture it. And it was just, I think because it runs flows so freely at Junction, there was always going to be big scores. And when you've only got 4 days, and when you say only, I've had 4 days that have gone a long, long time. When you've only got 4 days to bowl a team out twice on something like that and run the flowing, there's really no incentive to do either. You can score runs, and you know it's just as difficult to take wickets there as it is at the Jersey.
So we reached a stalemate there. That Pete brought all the field in, and the runs floated as 180 runs in that second session, but they couldn't come to an agreement. Now Pete wanted 350, Travis Head wanted 300, maybe 320, and I think a few of you blokes wanted 400. It got a bit willing there for a while.
It did a little bit. I mean, we sort of said, well, we we need these guys to get close, and we can bring everyone up, get really attacking with our fields, throw a couple of balls up. If they get the run rate flowing, then they'll get close to the total, and we might be able to manufacture a game. If they happen to hit one up in the air, we take a wicket, and the wickets flow, then yeah, that's moving the game forward as well. And I mean, I guess if you ever want to ask a question again about Victorian cricket culture, ask John Holland and Glenn Maxwell what they had to do to themselves to lob the ball up, get hit for six, and go, oh, well, you know, that's for the good of the game. And they basically sacrificed their own personal statistics and glory and everything that you want to throw out there just to get the game moving forward. And it was really a great team effort from those two guys, which you know, all the boys really appreciated.
Now, Whitey put a picture up of the ball at the end of the innings, Chris. Yeah. I've never seen something, you know, first-class match that you've had to use like that.
Yeah, well, I was standing a bit off and I threw the ball to Scotty Bowen when he was bowling. I said, mate, if you can find the seam, try bowling across it. And it was as flat as I've ever seen. I've never seen a ball like that. And we were sort of discussing it after training. We're like, you actually wouldn't even use that as a fielding ball at training. You just go, that's done, throw it away, or, you know, do something, give it to the dog or something. You wouldn't even use it to field with it. So it was a shocking.
So what do you take out of it, Chris, that match? Obviously, there were some terrific individual batting performances. It was tough to get anything done with the ball for both teams. What do you take out of it?
The bonus points. There's really not more you can take out of it from that. It was a good hit out. We got a bit of bowling under our belt, which was nice. I understand the frustration for people who support cricket and want to see cricket go well. And when Pete and Harry bowl as many overs as they did, and you know, James Pattinson's bowling off spin, I guess you've got to understand the longevity in Shield cricket, which is 10 to 11 games. And you don't want to spend all your tickets in the first game when there's probably not going to be a result. So, yep. You know, there was mentions of lack of respect and stuff at the game, and you're like, well, you know, we understand that, and we're very apologetic for the fact that we couldn't actually get a game going. But there is the long game that you do need to play in a season, where if you break your fastballs in the first game, then you are really behind the eight ball right from the start, and you don't want to do that, and that's unfortunate.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.